Welcome, everybody, members of the Berkeley High community, members of the world community. This is our first segment of the BHS Jacket podcast. That's right, we're starting a podcast. I'm your host, Arvin Hariri. I'm going to be interviewing members of the community, very much discussion-based. We'll talk about what's on the jacket, what's on our minds, what we've been doing, and it's going to be great. So basically, we're just getting a feel for it for now. This is a pilot episode that we're running, but really stay tuned to hear from us every other week, Sunday nights at 9 p.m. PST. So with that being said, I'd like to introduce Melina Fike, our very first guest. And then I'll put in cheering.
Did you just make that up on the top of your head, Sunday nights at 9 p.m., or did you know that?
I know that I'd have to submit it at Sunday, but I didn't know if I had to submit it.
Sunday at 9 p.m.?
No, I knew it had to be submitted on Sundays, because that's what I told the higher-ups, quote-unquote, when I'd be giving it to them. But, gotcha. Yeah, I mean, 9 p.m. just kind of gives me a lot of time to do it, so I don't have to, like, wake up crack in the morning and turn it in. I can work on it the entire day.
Great.
Anyways, yeah, that's for the sound effects, for the music.
Always jacket editors, they say deadline 9. That means really, like, deadline 10.
Yeah, honestly.
No shame.
Did you ever write?
I did, yeah, sophomore year.
How was that?
First
of all, who are you?
Oh, my name's Melina. So my name's Melina Fike, and I'm a senior at Berkeley High. I've known Arvin since we were, seventh or sixth graders or something.
Grade, something like that.
And I'm a senior right now at Berkeley High, and I'm in CAS, which is one of 5 small learning communities at Berkeley High School.
For those of you who aren't at Berkeley High School.
Those of you are part of the world community.
Somehow listening to this.
Yeah, so yeah, and that's been a great experience being in CAS. But we were just talking about, sophomore year, I did write for the jacket for 1 year. I knew that after my freshman year, I knew that I wasn't going to be really super challenged in my English class the way I wanted to. And so I thought, the best solution for that would be to join the jacket, which would have me writing really consistently, producing articles every 2 weeks, and articles that I felt more pressure to, produce high quality ones. And so then I wrote all of my sophomore year, and I found it to be a little bit stressful for me. I don't think I'm someone who has the best time management, so that was, I think my experience was a little bit hindered by that. But my writing grew, a ton, which was awesome. I definitely became a much better writer and got some really awesome journalism skills, so,
yeah, that was a plug for applying. Please apply. I used to be a writer last year, actually, too, but this year I'm kind of trying this out, tuning in my inner NPR, not that this is going to be anything like NPR, going more for Joe Rogan, but so Melina's here because she has been a tremendous activist and advocate in our community. She's been advocating for us both on the state level and on the local level. She did help vote 16 get passed through, which maybe just what was that starting from sophomore year, maybe talk about and other students, what can they do,
To help out.
To help out.
So, I'll try to do my best. I actually recently got lunch with some sophomore girls who wanted to join Vote 16, so I was giving them this rundown, and I realized that there is a lot to unpack with Vote 16, so I'll do my best to not go too far down the rabbit hole. But I joined Vote 16 towards the end of my freshman year, and it had already been a campaign for, I think, about a year, and it had been a citywide local campaign for a little bit less than that. And so Vote 16 was an idea that was started by some juniors, sophomores, seniors at Berkeley High in 2015, I believe. And the original concept was to somehow give students more of a say in the decisions that were directly affecting their lives in public schools. And it kind of spawned from a bit of dissatisfaction with the way that not only board members but administrators and just adults in general were responding to concerns from students and really taking action on the demands that students had, and it was something that there were a couple other cases that a Vote 16 campaign had been passed successfully, and so that started in 2015, and it actually
took it to the state, right?
Yeah, it actually went statewide first. Assemblymember Tony Thurmond,
who is now
the California State Superintendent. Yeah, he was our Assemblymember at the time, and he was able to sponsor that bill on the statewide level, and a lot of our Vote 16 members were able to actually go to the Capitol and lobby for it in committee, which is really exciting. Unfortunately, did not pass out of committee. That I think was partially due to some bad luck and to a committee chair that wasn't super fond of the idea. Something that I've learned in various political experiences that chairs actually have a lot of influence in which bills get passed. And I didn't know that at all through, you know, different model legislature programs I've done. So that was interesting. And so then they ended up taking it citywide. It got on the ballot in 2015, and then most of 2016 was focusing towards passing that Measure Y1. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of campaigning, a lot of canvassing, different social media campaigns. We, you know, revisited briefly the idea of sending out a citywide mailer, but then we realized that, you know, that costs about $12,000, and we simply could not fundraise enough. But luckily, Berkeley, you know, is a really progressive place to live, and where people have pretty much, like, widespread open-mindedness to things like this. And so we didn't feel like it was going to be the biggest fight in the world to get it passed. And mm-hmm. so luckily it did get passed with 70% of the vote in 2016, which was great. And since then, there have been a number of projects that we've worked on, steps we've been taking to work on the implementation process. Some of that includes, you know, running voter registration drives here at Berkeley High, mm-hmm. Tabling, going into classrooms. We have since partnered with the League of Women Voters, our local chapter here, and they've been really helpful in voter registration projects. And then maintaining that consistent communication with the school board, and then initiating and maintaining that with the Alameda County Registrar of Voters, who facilitate all of our local elections here. And so they were really the people to get in touch with to discuss how it was going to get implemented. And we got in touch with them and had a meeting in August of this year, 2018, and were able to sit down for the first time with them and talk about what these logistical aspects were going to be to implementing Measure Y1. It wasn't the most satisfying conversation, to say the least. It was pretty disappointing to hear that there hadn't been any steps taken, and that Vote 16 wasn't really any closer than it was when it was just passed
in 2016. And that's crazy, because they were legally obligated to mm-hmm. make sure that it worked, and they didn't.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. In hindsight, I've learned a lot from... Well, I've grown a lot throughout the Vote 16 campaign, just like as a person, as a leader, and as an activist. But something that I learned and I'm always going to take with me is that I think that as high school students, you know, like my political experience has been limited to, you know, things that I learn in gov class, and then my work in YNG, which is a model legislature program. And
talk so, like, I've second guys.
Yeah, we'll talk about that soon. But so I've like committee chaired through that program, and I've like seen like bill sponsors and like debated bills and like witnessed like our youth governor signing those bills. But I guess something that I just like didn't realize from those experiences is that after a bill gets passed into the legislature, or a measure gets passed, or a city charter amendment gets amended, the work doesn't just get done most of the time, mm-hmm. or like there needs to be some kind of push, and sometimes something just simply falls through the cracks, or the people who are supposed to begin working on it don't, and that's really frustrating. And so there needs to be kind of a third party in a lot of cases. Accountability, yeah. So that was disappointing, and we're still not very far along in the implementation process. I can try to give a brief update on that. But the goal is for 2020 to have an election with 16-year-olds voting for school board in 2020, and the registrar has said that that is possible. And so there's just a number of like financial things we need to figure out. We need to figure out, you know, like where the money is going to be coming from. We need to figure out exactly how much it's going to cost. We need to
Are maybe there, like, feel legal deal with legal.
Yeah. It's kind of complicated because of just like the already existing regulations surrounding how elections have to be run, how school board elections have to be run in relation to just citywide regular elections. Mm-hmm. And two of the places, I think one of the places in Hyattsville, or maybe it's Tacoma Park, Maryland, where vote 16 has already been passed, they run their elections like totally are run a different way than California. And so it's kind of hard to like, you know, follow that example. And let's see. So like one, just like give a little bit of, a peek into like what those logistical complications are. Something that we've been, that we talked about was, you know, how are absentee ballots going to be sent out? Are we going to need vote 16? Sorry, the election is going to be like have to be run as a special election, and so that makes other complications arise. So like, how many precincts are we going to have? There's going to be mm-hmm. need to be special training for the poll workers who run the precincts. We're gonna need to make sure that there's accessible voting, which is like which is voting that they have ready at every precinct, which is like being able like to vote kid online,
voting. Like
or I mean on like on a screen, like through some kind of like device that they have available for people who might have special needs or can't use the regular paper ballot, and that like legally has to be provided, which it should be, at every precinct. But how do we afford to have those machines, you know, like running on the same day at the same time if it's a special election when they aren't programmed to be able to do that? Mm-hmm. Just like a multitude of things which are a bit daunting. But that's something that the registrar is working on. And we recently, as Vote 16, we asked the school board to fund really like the next step, which is hiring lawyers that are going to work with lawyers from the registrar to really like review Measure Y1 and like work out all of the logistics and like give us a clear estimate of how much it's going to cost and map out maybe some of these legal roadblocks we're going to encounter, you know, maybe like catch things that like we probably missed, and things like that. So that was approved last month in October, and that's already underway, so that's exciting too.
Yeah, the school board stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot.
I can go into detail about other things too.
I think that's perfect. I mean, I just wanted to commend you especially because I, full disclosure, I'm cough. I'm on the school board, and they came talking about like why this was important to them and what the movement was, and they really sought to not just like punish us for not doing what we were meant to do, but really educating us on the issue. When they came to our board meeting and during they had a set of time allotted to vote 16 on the agenda, and really like I'm used to just watching presentations from adults just on various issues, so it was really really refreshing to just have a group of students and only students come up and talk about that accountability that really has to be happening on the district-wide level and on the city-wide level.
Yeah, I think for people maybe who haven't really heard of vote 16 before, I think just something that's worthy of noting about the campaign is that it's pretty much entirely youth-led, community-based. It's really like an effort that's driven by students at Berkeley High School. So I think that's, you know,
and
really great.
Yeah, and, you know, the movement has to live on,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Say it happens in Berkeley and by 2020 all students right. can vote. What's next?
Like, what's after 2020?
What do you think? Do you think you're going to take it back to the state?
I think that, well, first I want to say that it's been really great to see Vote 16 popping up in all these other cities, and it's happening in California too, and so there's that. I think that that is going to, if we eventually want to go statewide, it's really great support that we have a successful Vote 16 campaign in Berkeley, and one that'll likely be successful in San Francisco by 2020.
Okay.
We have a campaign in Sacramento. We have a campaign in, I believe, Fresno. We have other things like around LA. People have started initiating
they were really close the process of this in San Francisco last
they
time.
Were,
too.
They were like
45, 55. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it was closer.
Wow.
It was like within a percent, wow. I believe, of passing. Wow. So that's unfortunate, but that it's hopeful. And I think maybe some things will change in light of the Trump presidency and how people vote on that. Mm-hmm. But I think so to answer that for after 2020, I see a bunch of things happening. I think first and foremost, I'm really hoping that like in the next, if we think about this like super broadly, voter turnout in this country is so embarrassingly low.
But it's gotten higher.
Yes.
Okay.
It's still, in my opinion, very embarrassingly low. Yes, mm-hmm. But you're right. It has gotten higher. Mm-hmm. And then particularly for young people, it's even lower. And that's just like a problem that really needs to be addressed. And so I think that like long term, Vote 16, a very crucial part of Vote 16 is starting people voting at a younger age, starting getting it into more of a habit, making voting more of a part of the curriculum, part of civic education in high schools, in public high schools. And so hopefully what we can see in Berkeley, which I think is a really good place to, have this first kind of trial, is to have voting become part of the high school culture. Mm-hmm. And so you see like 16, 17-year-olds voting at even like higher rates than other adult citizens vote in Berkeley or nationally. And first of all, having that example, I think, is really strong to be able to use to advocate for Vote 16 in other cities and possibly statewide, is to say, oh, this already has happened successfully in Berkeley.
Right.
And then to point to all of these other things like high voter turnout rates, that, civic education is becoming a part of the curriculum at Berkeley High, that students are paying attention, that these representatives do care about this voting block and are like prioritizing it and are coming to Berkeley High School and doing panels and campaigning. And so that is kind of like long term what I'm hoping to see come out of this.
Yeah. Let's talk about you being in youth and government, how that started from freshman year and where you took that up until now and where you plan to take it maybe.
Sure. So I actually joined youth and government in seventh grade. I joined their Model United Nations program, which is a middle school program. Mm-hmm. Statewide. It's just, one of those MUN programs.
You used to like post those pictures on Instagram and I'd be like, I'm so jealous.
Sure I did. Why? Because I was like in a political.
Yeah. And I wasn't.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Yeah. Well, I started that and I've like always, I've grown up in a really political household and, mm-hmm. and I've always like, I think been a little bit more engaged, but, and we're just like tuned in.
DC protest.
My parents did meet at a protest in front of the White House. That is a true story.
That's crazy.
I do talk about that in one of my college essays.
Ugh.
So back to YNG. So I joined in seventh grade and then in eighth grade. And I of course like knew about the high school program, which is a lot more established and bigger than the middle school program, and then I was a freshman, and it was kind of just natural for me to go into that program. My first year, I was in Forum, which is like the freshman year program, mm-hmm. and I ran for chair in my committee, and I was elected as chair, and I facilitated, and that was like kind of like the first moment where I was like, oh, I really love like facilitating this kind of stuff, and I really love like leading small groups, and then I applied to like be a chaplain in my delegation, which, for those of you who don't know, which is probably most of you, misleading. Yeah. I led small groups, I led icebreakers, I just did a variety of stuff for our officer team for the delegation. So I like was involved on the delegation level. I was like secretary my junior year. And I then in like the statewide program, I was I applied to be a legislative committee chair my sophomore year, so, like, for the actual model Senate and Assembly, I was, like, chairing one of the committees, which was really exciting. Of course, I didn't really have very much influence on the bills and the outcomes of those initial debates, but I really enjoyed chairing as well, and that was a great experience. And then my junior year, so at that point, I'd, like, already been involved in Vote 16. I had kind of, like, explored what I wanted to explore in the program and like gotten a lot out of it. But I didn't really know what to do next. I knew that, like, I wanted to probably keep continuing with the officer team, but I, like, just didn't really know. And at the same time, so Nate Dahl, shout out to Nate, he was a longtime Berkeley lead advisor in the government. We have these, there's adult mentors who help facilitate the program. And so he was in that role for a while, and then he was an advisor. And then he, like, started working on his idea to completely, like, rework our political party system in youth and government, and to change it and adapt it so that it was, first of all, more issue-based as a political party system, more just, like, based on real political ideology than it already was, to establish political parties that were going to stay the same year after year, and to, then there's this whole other component of it, which was about bringing, like, real world youth activism into the program, which is kind of a component we've never really seen before. I mean, generally, the kids who are super hardcore into youth and government are also the kids who, you know, like, intern for the representative and are kind of engaged in that aspect. But there's still, like, a big, I think, cultural phenomenon about YNG where you'll have kids who are super politically aware and tuned in and reading the news and have all these opinions but aren't actually, like, doing anything or volunteering or working on projects or trying to, like, make change in their communities, which I think for a long time was just, like, one of the big faults of the program. And so Nate came along and was like, okay, so I want to start this project and start this program area, which is called Issues and Activism. So there's the issues, and then there's the activism. It's kind of self-explanatory. So then my junior year was like the first year that had ever existed. So it was really new. And I applied to be on the executive team for the party that I was sorted into from a political compass test.
What was that test like?
That was actually, so part of what I do now, which is I now chair one of the political parties, is, like, working with this new concept and adapting a lot of the things. You know, it's kind of trial and error for some of these things. We, the first year we had the political compass test, and it ended up not really giving us the results we wanted, and it was, like, it wasn't clear enough to be able to create the six parties that we wanted, and, like, as a result of that, the parties weren't super, you know, politically united, so okay. to speak. And then also, I think a big issue with that, just test objectively, was just that the statements, the questions on it were pretty, like, hard to understand for a lot of delegates and students, high school students, maybe, like, freshmen and sophomores more so, who just, like, didn't really understand these, like, political concepts and what their opinions were on them. And that,
so I think
was kind of not necessarily too young, just, like, a high school student who, like, is in the program, but just doesn't, like, it's pretty normal and conceivable to, like, have a high school student who, like, doesn't, you know how they feel about all of these political concepts, like,
yeah, most adults don't, I don't.
Well, yeah, exactly, even though we are, like, in a political program, so, like, there would be questions on, I don't know, actually, I won't give, like, specific what the problems were, what the specific ones were. Okay. It just generally was a little bit hard to comprehend for a lot of people. And so this year we made it a lot more issue-based. And so we're able to actually see, like, this party, or, like, my party, 88% of people said on the test, the survey, that they strongly agree that that women should have access to reproductive health care, for example. And that's really cool. And that's, like, different than how it has been. And
does that represent a shift in the people who are, like,
in each party? Yeah, we resorted everybody in between last year and this year.
Okay.
Hopefully this is coming
across. That's crazy, though. So that happened without your base, your YNG base of, like, delegates dramatically changing? It was the same kids, basically. Mm-hmm. No?
No. A lot of people changed parties.
No. I mean, like, the kids who were in YNG in the first place.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The sophomores turned into juniors, but they were the same juniors.
They're the same juniors, and they were just in a different party.
But, like, you managed to sort them
into different parties.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So this year, so actually, it's interesting. Something I can talk about is do you want to go into, like, our first conference and what that was like?
Go, yeah, please.
Okay. I'm just gonna go into that a little bit. It's kind of interesting.
She's really taking off your jacket.
I am. We're opening up the can of worms. So,
yeah.
Okay, so every year, youth and government, there are three conferences. There's the first conference we call Fresno 1 because it's in Fresno, and it's the first conference we have in Fresno. Self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. And I, as party chair, there are six party chairs.
What's the name of your party?
My party is the Grizzly Party. That's so they, cool. Yeah, so they all have, kind of like California themed, party names. So there's the Grizzly Party, Redwood, Trout, Gold, Avocado, and Poppy.
I didn't know that actually.
Yeah.
I knew you were the chair of the Grizzly Party,
but you didn't know the other ones.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So I'm the Grizzly Chair. So we went into the first conference, and as chairs, like this conference was like our, kind of our biggest, like, most demanding role we were going to have to play as, like, a presiding officer. Mm-hmm. So in later conferences, we do more, like, party directing unless these are all of the members in my party and I'm going to, like, lead this, like, debate session. And so that was kind of more exciting for me. It was, like, a more demanding conference than it was for a lot of other delegates who are just going to, like, learn about what these other options are in the program and what they want to do within the program. And so we went to the conference, and I was, you know, like, really excited to lead, really excited to, like, be presiding. It was, like, I think my party this year is, like, somewhere in the realm of, like, 400 to 500 delegates. Mm-hmm. So I had to, like, preside, lead in parliamentary procedure these debates, and then lead, like, our youth governor, like, primaries within our party. And so the way we did it is, like, we have six parties, so three parties went first, and then three parties went in the afternoon. For these debate sessions. And the purpose of the debate is to pass planks that at the end of the session will make up our party's platform for the entire year. And as the chairs, we kind of gave a little, like, you know, this is what everyone answered on the PIC. These are kind of our issues of commonality. And then these are also the ones we passed last year. And all of the parties, like, had a pretty, like, smooth run. For me, like, it was good. We passed, like, eight planks or something, so it was productive. There was a little bit of just, like, a little bit of lack of control, but it wasn't super bad.
What do you mean by lack of control?
Well, on my part, I think that part of the problem with it being such a new program area is that there isn't always protocol for certain circumstances. So, like, if I'm presiding and during the debate someone wants to make an amendment, and then I'm told, you know, like, by a lead staff, oh, you know, that's just a judgment call. Just make a judgment call right now. Mm-hmm. And then I make it. Well,
parliamentary procedure.
It's different. It's okay. A little bit different. It's not exactly parliamentary procedure. It's kind of a little bit more informal. So for that, like, when I make a staff decision while I'm presiding, maybe it's not the best decision. Maybe some people have issues with that. Maybe people get upset. Maybe that means that there's constantly amendments, and then that just, like, is disrupting the flow, and people, it's just, there's the energy changes. That kind of thing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to talk about kind of, like, what the whole drama was in the conference, is that one of the six parties, the Trout parties, going mm-hmm. into the conference, we kind of knew, based on data from the PIC, that the Trout party was going to be probably the most conservative-leaning mm-hmm. party. And, you know, when we're dealing with a high school program of California high school students, you know that, like, from all over the state, you know that, like, the political demographics, like, it's going to be very much predominantly Democrats, left-leaning, identifying
true.
People.
Especially, I think it's exaggerated even in youth and government, from my experience
possibly,
in the
yeah.
program. Yeah.
Yeah. But part of that is, I think that we've never really had real political parties before. There isn't really, like, of course, there's those real world influences where people identify as Democrats or Republicans, but we're high school students, we're in a model legislature mm-hmm. program. There is no, like, actual formal role of, like, a Democratic type party. And now we have this party system where there are, like, six parties, and not all of them have really fully established that kind of identity yet. And so this year we had the parties were more politically representative, and the Trout party from the get-go was definitely, like, more conservative leaning. And so we approached the debate. I had already had my debate, and so I was just kind of sitting in the back and watching that debate. happen.
But really quick, before the trout party and all that
all
fiasco,
of the party.
Whatever happens. But do you think that in years prior, even though there were conservatives present at YNG conferences, they were more so like a silent minority?
Or do you think
they were still vocal?
No, I would say so. I mean, I think vocal in the sense that they're conservative individuals who are totally outspoken and confident and good public speakers who are willing to go up and express their ideas in front of a room full of people who likely only a few people out of those 300 are actually going to, you know, agree with them. Mm-hmm. So yes, vocal in that way. And there is a conservative delegate caucus in the program in that I actually am not sure about like how many students regularly attend those meetings, but that's has a solid presence, but the caucus doesn't have much of authority or influence really. But that for like a really long time has been a space for conservative delegates to go and like talk and debrief and talk about issues in a more homogenous space. So that does exist, but yeah, for the most part that we've never elected, I mean, in 70 years, probably yes, but in my experience, we've never elected a conservative youth governor. Generally elected officials aren't conservative.
Don't remember seeing any.
Yeah, any.
In my 2 years.
And so, like, everyone kind of knows that, like, and when I say everyone, this is very much us, them, and I'll try to stay away from that, but when I'm talking about, like, everyone, often that is applying to people, like, in my own community and Berkeley delegates who are all left-leaning and liberal and progressive.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But, and there are definitely delegations who have probably more of a conservative presence in them. But, so yeah. So, like, minority.
Yeah.
And not super powerful and not probably super united. And so what we saw in the Trout Party was kind of, for the first time, a lot of conservative delegates being given a platform and a voice and a way to, like, unite and like do something in debate style, which
so they were scattered,
pretty much unheard of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the unscattered
thing. Right. So last year when the political compass test wasn't very representative and just, you know, there were still a lot of kinks, and didn't work out the way we wanted to, all the conservative delegates were pretty much spread in between all the parties. And then this year, they were put a lot more concentratedly into the Trout Party. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is basically the debate got very rowdy. It got very nationalist. There was USA chanting. There was different, like, everyone standing up. There was shouting. There was no, like, decorum, sort of, like, peace in the room. The presiding officer, who is, you know, the party chair, who I know well, had control, but it wasn't, there were a lot of things that just were not in her control.
Was the party chair perpetuating any of that nationalism?
No. I don't think that she was directly, like...
Was she even conservative?
No.
that must have been a nightmare.
Right, but she, yeah. So that's...
wow.
That happened.
Wow, geez.
But the debate, so like, to give you a little, maybe more insight into what the outcome was, is that the planks that they passed were... that the Trout Party believes in the Second Amendment, principles of free speech, in more limited government, tighter border security, and then there's like a couple more that
I can't
remember.
They sound pretty classical conservative.
Exactly.
They don't really stand out to me.
Right.
It's like crazy. I mean, it's
pretty
like Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Like.
But basically, like the environment got like really rowdy and really dangerous and somewhat violent and aggressive. And in YNG, we talk a lot about the concept of debating ideas, not people. That's something that we stress a lot. And
yeah,
it's
that's
a, like,
what
recurrent
my room
thing.
Card said sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
Debate ideas, not people.
Exactly. And kind of what came out of this was very much a debating people, not ideas. So one of the planks that went up for debate was about affirmative action. That got really kind of scary. For a delegate who was placed into that party who is not conservative, who is a delegate of color, who maybe doesn't, like, have other... isn't like surrounded by other people in the delegation or friends or like their advisors and there, and this starts happening, and they feel really threatened. Like, that's really scary. And we had delegates who were leaving crying, and we had delegates who, were like getting like filmed crying. It was like very much a mess. And, core staff like started coming in, and there were tons of advisors in the room, people just standing up. So So that was, like, something I think that I've never witnessed, and most people had never, no one had ever seen something like that happen. And that, like, was kind of just, like, one of those, like, okay, so how do we deal with this? How do we make sure this doesn't happen again? And how do we, like, move forward? Do we, like, allow people to switch parties? Do we allow this one party to become the very, like, conservative party? There were a lot of, like, questions that arose from that. And what we ended up doing as chairs is, like, going on stage at the end, at the closing session, where everyone is in the room and, each making a statement, saying that youth and government will not condone or support, xenophobia, racism.
I thought you said condemn, and I was so confused.
condone, sexism, mm-hmm. misogyny, that was hopefully powerful and resonated, and especially resonated to the people that might have been feeling,
like,
unsafe.
Do you think that there's, like, misogyny and sexism rooted in the classical conservative principle that, for example, abortion should not be made widely available?
Well, this is a whole other question now.
Do you think, like, that... I mean, I think it's related because, like, say say that you don't condone any of it, but then the Trout Party comes along and says, but no, like, this is our not radical, like, pretty normal
our
right opinion.
Values.
Yeah, our core value. That, and not for sexist reasons, just we just think that it should be that way.
I mean, I think that what we're trying to establish with that is that, we're not trying to, you know, like, say that you're not allowed to debate and to discuss these issues that, or these opinions that we believe are inherently misogynist or sexist, but it's saying that we're not going to let it, we're going to maintain that debating ideas, not people, and we're not going to let it get into an environment where it's potentially dangerous and isolating for delegates. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't want it to, because that debate was not very, was not productive. It wasn't, like,
it was just, like, he said, she said.
Kind of, yeah. And I think, like, just, like, very dividing and very isolating for a lot of people. And while it might have given some kind of, like, platform and unity for a lot of the conservative delegates in the room, that's something that could have been established without that kind of event taking place.
I feel like it's almost a case study.
It really is. It's interesting. I want to talk about it more.
Especially because it's, like, young people, and I think young people have a much purer perspective, especially in politics,
mm-hmm,
than...
Definitely.
So...
I would agree with that.
I wish we had some, like, researchers kind of, like, take hairs from the conservative delegates and, like, rush them back to their lab. No.
It'd be interesting, though, to, like, really break it down and, I don't know, maybe if I, like, had more experience studying these things. I'm a high school student. I haven't been to college yet. I don't really even know. I haven't even, like, finished my government course right now.
Yeah.
Which sucks, by the way. Like,
your government
I'm a
course.
Senior. No, not the government course.
Okay.
But well, I mean, partially.
Like,
this
is,
like,
public. You know, your government teacher can.
It sucks. It sucks that I'm a senior in high school and I haven't finished taking a government class. I mean.
Ever. Wow.
I mean, the thing is, like, I have a very well-versed knowledge of, like, how the government works because I'm, like, driven and I'm to, like, engage in that kind of stuff because, mm-hmm, like, that's what I care about.
Yeah.
But, like, there's certain things that I'm learning about in government. Like, I'm reading the Constitution for the first time right now, and that's kind of weird and scary to me because I'm like, man, this is, like, stuff that I've, like, been involved in talking about and debating about for so long, but I've never actually read it because I've never, like, had that platform in school.
Bless my 8th grade teacher, dude.
You read it in 8th grade?
Yeah, and not only did we read it, she was crazy. She was an amazing teacher. I think she really got me interested in politics. I think she goes by
Thornley.
Thornley.
Miss Thornley is now Miss
Hodder.
Hodder.
Basically, wow. She not only made us read it, mm-hmm, she made us translate it into not common speak, but, like, slang.
That's hilarious. We're doing somewhat that right now.
It was crazy.
It's really interesting.
But, yeah. So, what do you think has to happen at TNE2 and at SAC?
Oh. So TNE2, which is like Fresno 2, our second conference,
yeah.
And then Sacramento, which is our culminating conference where we everything kind of like reaches its peak.
Yeah, so the students trained to do.
Right. So what we've done already is that we've allowed people we've established a system for people to switch parties. So we're hoping that like that works out for some people. I don't really know like what I think a lot of like processing did take place after that at our first conference, and so like I don't think there needs to be a whole like revisit to like how do we like heal from this or how do we protect people from this type of conversation, but I like but I think like definitely like just like being conscious of that, keeping that in mind, trying to like make sure that we don't give a platform for like that kind of thing to happen again where it's putting some people in uncomfortable and scary situations.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see kind of like where it goes and where the child party goes.
Update me. Update the world community.
The world community. Is that what we... Is that your coin term?
No, I don't know yet. It's the first... As you said with your whole this is a new thing, issues and activism, this is also a pretty new thing.
Right, podcast is new.
I'm kind of trying to get a feel for the podcast, and of course, you can leave me any feedback. Just feel free to contact me at Arvin Hariri, ARVINHARIRI, @students.berkeley.net. I will gladly respond to all of your emails, happy, angry, constructive, all of it. Let's talk about the college application process, because I know that there are a lot of we're kind of getting away from politics now, but, so sorry for all you NPR lovers. But are you reading the jacket?
Sorry, I am. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
beautiful.
I didn't
know that this was dope.
Yeah, you should read it. Every single issue. Anyways, so
primary news source.
I used to write a lot for news. That's what I did last year. I just loved going to the school board meetings.
Features.
I literally knew Josh Daniels before I was on the board.
Josh Daniels is the boy.
Yeah, he's
don't
the.
Put that in there.
Josh Daniels. I might just have to.
Oh my god.
Okay, so college application process. Oh. It's coming up. UCs are due. We're recording this on Wednesday, November 28th. UCs are due in 2 days. And
I have written one essay.
No way! No! No way.
I'll submit it. I just gotta do it tonight. I'm recording this podcast. I just have to do it tonight.
Okay.
It's okay.
3 essays tonight? Okay, that'll work.
And then tomorrow will be, like, my revision period, and then
I have one.
Friday it's submit.
Yeah, I personally have one left to do. I was done yesterday, last night at 2 a.m.
Nice.
But then I went to my, we have college counselors, wonderful high school, thank you so much, district for those college counselors, but she reviewed my essay, well, all four of them. She was like, these three are good, but this one, like, is absolutely terrible.
Like, for me, it's just been, like, senior year has been such a trip being, I talk about this like literally every day. Going into that like final year of high school, and first of all dealing with like that kind of identity, like, oh my god, I'm still a senior in high school and I can't wait to like leave the world and leave high school.
That's
type
crazy.
Of thing, which has been really intense.
Yeah,
really real
it's
for
so
me
hard.
It's like the senioritis, but like senioritis and like identity crisis form, like I'm like I can't be here because I feel so contained in this space that I should not be in type of thing. So like dealing with that, and then like dealing with all of the work and like academic work that I have already like last year that I'm used to, in addition to college apps, which are like super demanding, in addition to taking on like more demanding leadership roles than things that I've been involved in than ever. So like that's like crazy. So for me, like, I think actually the college process has been really revealing. Like, I've, in trying to figure out where I'm going to apply and what I'm going to write about, I think learned a lot about myself, learned a lot about what kind of academic experience I want, what I want to study, what I want to, like, do and get involved in when I get to college, where I want to be in the world and in the country.
And what is that exactly?
Oh. I should probably answer that. Me personally, I've gone through the past 4 years in Communication Arts and Sciences, or CAS, which is one of the small learning communities at Berklee High School. And that's, like, I think really heavily influenced my desire to go to, like, a small liberal arts school in which I can, like, connect with professors in the same way that I've been able to, like, have, like, maintain relationships with teachers in high school. So, like, being able to talk to teachers, having close relationships with my peers, small class sizes, and then learning in a very interdisciplinary way. I'm, like, someone who has a lot of interests, and I'm, like, really excited to, like, take really interesting classes that intersect those things. So I'm applying to, like, smaller liberal arts schools. In big cities, I think, like, what I want to be a very big part of my college experience is, like, having internships and getting, like, experience, real world experience.
Oh, you really want it all.
Yeah, I do.
Small school in a big city with lots of internships.
Exactly.
That's, yeah,
I'm not going to talk about, like, what specific schools I'm applying to, because that's a tricky conversation. But
I advise nobody to ever do that in a public forum. It's just, like, it's bad.
It's bad. But I mean, you can probably assume from what I'm saying right now, kind of, like, what some of the schools might be.
I genuinely can't, but I might be silly. Somebody in the audience might.
I am, like, gotten really interested in women's colleges. I think that, like, women's education is
super
powerful. Yeah. I'm applying to some women's colleges. I think that that, like, experience would be super, super beneficial, and that environment would be incredible.
Why specifically?
I think this is, like, something that I find hard to put into words, but I think that, like, first of all, just, like, being in an academic environment in which there's, like, that base kind of, like, equalizing aspect where everyone is a woman, and there's kind of, like, you're given a space to, like, explore yourself as, like, a leader and explore, like, what you're interested in, like, an academic environment that's a lot more neutralized without, like, those gender dynamics. I think that those same gender dynamics that, like, you experience in the classroom are, of course, really present in the workplace, and that's something that, like, I don't want that to, like, in the future be something that is I'm somewhat blind to, or that is, you know, like, hurting my professional career. And I think that going to women's colleges, a college would, like, really give me, like, an experience where I can, like, break down what those are and, like, grow in a place where that I'm not hindered by that, and then go into, like, my professional career with a better understanding of that. I also think just, like, being a part of, like, an all-female environment, like, having, like, that kind of, like, support is really special. I'm like, someone who, like, I'm really excited to, like, go to college and make new friends, and, like, I think that it'd be really awesome to, like, get to do that at a women's college. There's, like, that's, like, kind of briefly why. Back into, like, where else I'm applying, I, like, am kind of obviously someone who is interested in studying politics in some way, shape, or form, so
I'd be really, like, thrown off if you came in here and you're like, I want to major in neurobiology and computer
not
science.
Not at all. So I'm thinking,
whoa.
Like, I know, like, what I want to, like, explore when I get to college. So, like, maybe that's political science. Maybe it's pre-law if I want to go all the way. Maybe it is
American
studies. Really?
Yeah, if you want to go to law school, this is a good advice for you guys, too. It's, like, law schools, on a large scale, don't really want to see pre-law. They want to see you explore your interests and stuff. I mean, law school, pre-law is really good at preparing you for LSATs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think it's a lot better to kind of broaden your horizons before applying to law school.
I definitely would agree with that, now that you bring that up.
Don't take what I say as, like, 100% truth. That's just what I think, personally.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm, like, kind of a total history buff. I'm so, like, every day I'm, like, I cannot wait to go to college and take American history the real, thorough, right way. Like, every time I've taken American history class in, like, my K-12 career, it's, like, been cut short. I've never gotten past the 60s. I, like, don't know about, I literally don't know anything about, like, the Vietnam War. I'm just going to admit that. Like, really? I've just never gotten to that, in that point. Like, I'm so.
It's the exact opposite for me, dude. I did the Vietnam War twice. I'm doing the Vietnam War again right now, and I'm I just don't know anything excited. Else.
And what I'm so excited
like, if
to,
somebody
like,
asks
it.
Me Vietnam, American history, I'll just be like, yeah, so there was a war in Vietnam, and that's about all
that's
I
about
know.
That's about it, end of story. Yeah, so I'm so excited to, like, take American history, maybe, like, you know, explore American studies, maybe explore women or gender sexuality studies, maybe history, world history. It's definitely Spanish. I have so many desires. You know, obviously not all of these are going to come true, but this is just, like, my list. Spanish, definitely, like, want to become fluent in that.
Really?
in that, yes.
Yes.
Yes. So, like, I am in AP Spanish right now. I'm hoping to, like, be able to, like, test into, like, take
And this is where we transition into the Spanish version of the podcast. Hola, con mi. no, I'm just kidding.
I'm under too much pressure right now to, like, really articulate this whole idea in Spanish. But I want to, like, go and, like, take Spanish classes and then go to study abroad, hopefully.
That's, yeah. Study abroad in Spain, Mexico.
Definitely Central and South America.
Ooh.
I just, wonderful. Like, think that that's much more interesting than just going to, like, Barcelona and being like, hey, I'm in Barcelona.
Yeah. Know. Totally with you. Yeah.
So how about you? Where, like, what are you looking for in a school?
I just want to be.
What's your dream school?
I'm not going to say.
No.
Of course.
we'll turn the podcast off.
Then, I already applied early.
Yeah, same.
But, Yeah. Yikes. Mm-hmm. Comes out in, what, 2 weeks? 3 weeks? Yeah. 2.5 weeks? How are you dealing with that?
Weeks.
How are you
dealing with that? Oh, it's horrible. It's eating me alive. It's like, I'm constantly, no, seriously, it's like I'm constantly pitting myself, like, comparing myself against all of these other, like, people who
from
I,
your school?
From Berkeley High, who I know have applied early too, and I'm, like, thinking about it, and I'm, like, going through my application, I'm rereading my Common App, I'm, like, going through every single piece, and, like, questioning things and like feeling like this is why I'm not gonna get in. This is you know what I mean. It's horrible, and the anxiety is just so.
I wrote one of my main supplements. So the application for the school I applied to was really long. One of my main supplements, I decided to write a poem. They're like,
that's three. Like the movie poll when your teacher says, so you can either write, you can choose one of these things for your end of the year project, and then one of them's a poem, and then you just spend like 30 minutes on it.
Well, okay, I worked really hard on
okay,
it.
Okay, good.
Mr. or Mrs. Admissions Officer, I'd like you to know I worked very hard on that poem, but
again, that's Arvin Hariri, A-R-V-I.
His common application number is, no. It was just. There were three real chances to get to express yourself as a person.
Okay.
And one of them, I was like, F it, man. Like, I'm not getting it anyways. Let's just make this a beautiful poem. If they don't understand it. I read it to my friend who was like, Arvin, I have no idea what the heck you're talking about right now. And I was like, well, it wasn't written in, like, weirdly. It wasn't anything strange. But I could understand why. Maybe it was a little bit hard to follow.
Okay.
But, yeah, I decided just I'm going to go all out, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, I'll move on.
Yeah. It's really, I think it's, like, one of the worst periods of waiting that exists in the world. I'm having a really hard time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really intense, actually. Like, I cannot even stress that enough. Like, what else do I have to say about that? It just sucks.
I was so much less stressed, like, before the application
Same.
Deadline. I was like, I'm just gonna have fun with this.
But,
like the supplement after the poem was, like, it was, like, I'm a poet at heart, but it's much more fun to be a rapper than a poet, or something like that. Like, trust me, it made sense, but, like, it was me just not taking myself too seriously, which
That's
is
good.
Now
which
in
kind
retrospect.
It might be good to.
But in retrospect, I think maybe I should.
But the thing is, like, a lot of those, like, really competitive schools that get, like, really competitive applications is, like, I'm sure they get a lot of people taking themselves too seriously. So, you know, maybe that'll, like, be working your favor.
Or maybe they'll have a lot of, like, wise butts like myself.
Oh, who are, like.
Who are, like.
I didn't think that I was a very, like, funny person or, like, I don't know. I just, like, yeah. Because people say, like, when you're writing your college essays, that if you're funny, use that. If you're not funny, don't try.
Yeah.
Right? But I, like, had people reading my personal statement, and, like, they were, like, laughing out loud at, like, some of the, like, kind of casual just, like, jokes that I made, and so that was comforting.
Aw. Yeah. Maybe you made your admissions officer laugh. Hopefully. I bet they've already... Hopefully. What stresses me out is that they've already read my application,
probably. I actually don't know if they've already read mine.
How?
Well, because why? Well, I emailed my admissions rep, and I was like, well, how would you know that they...
I just assume that, like,
I guess we're pretty close to the deadline.
Yeah, December's coming up, and, like, they have to do their admissions committee thing, so...
Yeah.
By now, they've probably read it, and that's something that stresses me out, personally.
It's pretty hard to know that there are, like, people somewhere that I will not name.
I just hate...
reading your...
Yeah, I just hate the fact that you have to compete with the people at your school. That's crazy to me.
It's crazy, and it sucks.
That's like a pit fight.
It sucks. No, it sucks because you, like, know these people, and you're, like... And
I'd
you're,
rather
like,
be,
think
like,
about it in your head, and you're, like, I wonder, like, what extracurriculars they have, and, like, that's just a dangerous place to go.
I don't really think so much about extracurriculars, but
really?
I've
been very focused on that.
I'm very focused on, like, legacy and, like, donating money to the school and stuff like that. I know that my extracurriculars are somewhat good. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not... I think that at that point it almost does become a crapshoot, and like I'm glad with where I've gone with my extracurriculars because I've been able to do some really amazing things that have like made me happy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What else can I say about the process?
I don't know. I just think how are you moving along on your supplements?
Oh, those are hard.
I know.
Okay, so I'm one of those students who like does everything last minute, especially like big like writing assignments, because I just like have really false self-confidence for those kinds of things at least, and so like I like kind of have so far I've submitted like 3 private school apps. I haven't submitted my UCs up, but you know, we know how that's going. But like for all of the supplements that I've submitted so far for those 3 schools, I did them like within a few days to a week before the deadline, and not really. I would not recommend, but...
Yeah.
But, like, if you're confident in your writing abilities, like...
Which you can become confident.
If you join the jacket.
They're taking applications at some point during the year. Stay tuned. Listen to the announcements. You will be able to become a great writer. No, but in all seriousness, I think the jacket helped a lot.
Oh, definitely.
With my writing. Because I didn't write enough in English class.
Funny because it's kind of turned into a conversation where you and I are just like having a conversation like we normally would.
Yeah.
And like we're recording this. Like,
how's Cass?
What's up in Cass? Oh my god, Cass is great. I actually have to write an essay about Cass tonight for my UC Ops. Cass is like probably the best community that I have in my life. And I take it for granted because I'm, like, in school class every day and I just, like, don't, like, really realize it. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's so special to, like, be, like, a member of CAS and to, like, know all of your classmates, like, so well and be so comfortable in class and, like, know your teacher so well. And, like, it's really great. I don't know what else to say. I'm super excited for our retreat. I think that's, like, in April. Which is
I was in a second semester,
like.
I was in a class with just CAS kids last year.
Oh, no.
Because they messed up... Well, they didn't mess up my... Yeah, they messed up my schedule.
What class was it? Math or something?
Advanced Digital Photo.
Oh,
it was a CAS
class. Gotcha. Oh, so it was, like, CAS seniors last year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All CAS seniors. Wow. There were some non-CAS... There was, like, less than 6, I would say.
Okay.
And I was one of them. But... Basically, we were looking for things to put into my schedule because I was short a class because the way the schedule was addressed, I couldn't take my math class and my French class and my economics class, which would have been my elective. So my teacher was like, you have to drop one. And so obviously I dropped the elective. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, okay, here are your options. Art history, which I joined, and then they kicked me out of it. And then... CAS ROP
Digital
Photo. Want to
talk a little bit more about that?
Getting kicked out of art history class.
Uh-huh. I haven't heard this story before.
Yeah, I was just such a bad kid, and they just one day said, you can't come back. No. They ran out of space. Basically, okay, I was late to join, and they didn't even have enough chairs for, like, I didn't have a chair basically, or a desk. And so, I mean, that's a problem. I don't think our school is over-enrolled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our average class size is 28, which is absolutely fantastic. I can say I'm very proud of that.
Your school board.
My inner school board is channeling out. But at the same time, kind of a product of that has been...
Sorry, I'm just thinking about Arvin during leadership meetings. Like, not for an update on the school board and then just talking about stuff that just is so, like, irrelevant. And he's like, Berkeley City Council is... You're like, Berkeley City Council is using our space, which is really good because our space is, like, really much better than the Berkeley City Council chambers. And everyone's like, why do we care? And you're so excited about it.
Okay, but Mr. B just tells me I have to talk, so I talk. But have you seen those city council chambers?
Yeah,
they're awful.
Pretty.
We did
pretty
bill
heinous.
Hearing night.
They're pretty heinous.
Yeah, they were pretty heinous. I remember testifying, and I was just like, "Damn, I feel really bad for these guys right now."
School board's much better.
Yeah, school. Basically, they tried to weasel us out. They in 2000 when we built the area for the school board meetings, we were supposed to have the city council there as well.
Mm.
And I don't know if you care. I don't know why I'm talking about this. But the city
just
they weaseled out of it. And they basically, we had to pay a lot of money that we couldn't really afford at the time. But we had to do it anyways because, you know, got to pay the builders.
Yes.
And so we were really mad at them. But we forgive them.
Kind of.
No salt. Mr. Aragin. I mean, he wasn't even mayor then. I don't know what I'm talking about. What were we talking about before we got there?
How good we're doing at class sizes, which
to
do with
your so the byproduct of class sizes. Yeah, wow, you're so good at memory.
I'm pretty good.
So the byproduct of having class sizes like that is we try to allocate large or small classes to students who really need them. And so in a class like AP Art History, a lot of the kids are basically going into the most advanced portion of what they can.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that they're self-motivated enough and self-pacing enough and autodidactic enough, which means self-teaching, that they can kind of deal with the larger class size without getting lost. A lot of what a big problem that's been going on in not just Berkeley High, but schools across the state and across the nation is that kids are getting lost in these large class sizes, in these large schools that aren't really giving them the support that they need. And this is true for elementary up to middle and even up to college, really, is, you know, people dropping out because that support system
really
isn't available to them. And so that's what we've been doing is the advanced classes, bigger, the more preliminary classes, kind of make sure that the kids have the support that they need. But anyways, yeah, so I had to not take, econ, and I took CAS ROP, and this is where the whole CAS conversation came from. This is why it's relevant to CAS, is, those kids seemed so, so tightly knit.
Yeah.
Like, they seemed like they'd all been best friends for life.
Yeah.
And I felt like an outsider for a while.
I mean, if you think about it, you spend a lot of time, like, for the past 4 years, we've been spending, like, at least 4 hours a day with this group of kids.
I've never had a core class. I mean, I had a core, like, when I was supposed to have a core class, my core class was broken because they messed up the schedule.
Nice.
Never had a core class, so
that's
just insane.
It's kind of interesting, like, being a senior now. Like, I remember being a freshman and going from my non-CAS class to my CAS class, and the shift was so intense. It was, like, my non-CAS class, because I was, like, I was ahead in math, so I didn't take CAS math. So I would, like, be in these classes with a bunch of kids from the grade above me. I had pretty much no friends. I was just, like...
Except me.
When?
Just kidding.
We didn't have class together.
No. You said I don't have any friends.
Oh, no. In the class. Like, in those classes. I did have friends, and I had CAS friends. I just didn't have, you know, those friends. And so I'd be, like, sitting in those classes just, like, feeling awful and self-conscious. And, like, I was so much more conscious of, like, how I was, like, behaving and speaking. And I never raised my hand. And it just was, like, really not a good experience. And especially, like, to have that and then to go, like, the juxtaposition was so intense. Like, going then to my CAS class.
Public.
And I was, like, thanks. And I was, like, all of a sudden, like, everyone I knew, kids that I had multiple classes with a day, kids that, like, I was going on retreats with and, like, field trips with, and We had done like community bonding exercises in the past, and like that just was like, there's just like the academic environment is just super starkly different. But now like being a senior, it's the contrast is definitely less intense, but I think that that's just, you know, part of the fact that like a lot of people, even if I've never had class with them, like as seniors, like we all like know each other a lot better. So it's like, it's more comfortable, but
something I would like to say about the CAS community though, very welcoming. I did feel weird at first, but I mean, by the end of the year, we were all getting lunch and just like,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. It was like I had my secret cult of friends alongside my other friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah, CAS kids. But yeah.
But you've been in IB?
Yeah.
What a terrible choice.
Let me I don't think it's a terrible choice. I think, actually, some of my classes are extremely fascinating.
That's good.
Like, my class, my English class, transformed into this class where we just talk about things. Like, talk about very simple things, be it political, be it historical, and then it's just discussion-based, and kids kind of just talk about their feelings, and it's insane just kind of trying to understand where people who come from very different backgrounds than yourself,
right,
how they're feeling about certain issues, and it just gives you insight as to what the world is like from another lens. And then the period after that is my theory of knowledge class, where you talk about those things in a lot more abstract sense. And I really just enjoy that because, well, first of all, I love talking, and you get the opportunity to talk a lot in that class. And second of all, just the stuff, it's basically what we were discussing in our English class, but just turned into abstractions and no longer using formal kind of registers.
I wish I could take that class.
Yeah.
There are definitely, I would say, like, a few classes at Berkeley High that I'm just probably going to regret for a really long time not having the opportunity or just not, like, being willing to take.
Like what?
Law and social justice, definitely.
Yeah,
probably
me
that's
too.
The top one. I, like, just haven't been able to take it because of CAS. This year, like, although I technically could take it and, like, graduate and everything would be fine, just for college I'm choosing to also, like, continue with math and science because I just, you know, that is just pretty important, but
A through G and stuff,
right,
like,
and I figure that I'll take courses that are similar in college, but that's, yeah, that's been hard to, like, have my gov class right across the hall from law and social justice, and sort of desperately wish that I was in that class instead. IB art, I'm not really an artist. I'm a visual artist, so that's, you might be wondering why I would be interested in IB art, but
I think that testing the waters.
Yeah, I think it'd be a really interesting class to take. What else is on the list? Politics and power, I know less about that class, but it sounds interesting.
I would have loved to take that class, along with globalization, but I needed to take economics to get the IB diploma.
Oh, right.
But, yeah, it's just perfect. Like, you get a role. You get assigned, like, a senator or a member of Congress. I'm not sure if it's a member of the House. But, and then you have to just play them for the rest of the semester. That's crazy to me.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I
would make a great Sarah Palin.
Oh, God.
Just kidding. you don't get to choose. It's randomly assigned. But,
okay.
You know.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Definitely, like, anything in the African American Studies department. I took Afro-Haitian my freshman year, which was great, because I could, because I had a free elective period my freshman year. Definitely, like, would do it again. But yeah, like, anything in that department would be super cool. What else? I mean, like, DP, I will always regret. But that's, like, because it conflicts with YNG, so
I'm dancing
dance
in case.
Right now.
Yeah, I'm a dancer.
In case you can't see me, well, you can't see him, but he's dancing.
I am a dancer.
I really regret not doing DP. Like, I couldn't because of YNG, and I just, like, I do a lot of modern dance, but I've never had an opportunity to, like, either choreograph or, like, do that kind of hip-hop, which just, like, seems so fun, and I regret that so much. Or not regret, I just super upset about it. What else do I wish I could go back and take? A lot of classes.
A like,
oh, we have a Bible study class at Berkeley High.
A Bible study class?
Or, like, Bible as literature.
Like, that's just all you do?
You study the literature of the Bible.
But, wow, those kinds of classes exist at some schools. The Bible is literature, law and social justice. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would totally take those, but it just, there isn't room for my IB diploma.
Oh, like, advanced video production, definitely would take that. I took regular because it's required as CAS, but mm-hmm. I wish that I could take full out. Like, honestly, like, some good, like,
who do you think CAS film is photography. For?
What?
To any 8th graders listening, who do you think CAS is for? Or 9th graders, actually.
I think it's for absolutely anybody who... I think it's for anybody. I think it benefits anybody. I don't think that there should be a type.
There's no type of person you don't think would fit into CAS?
You know, yeah. There's definitely a person that I think wouldn't fit in, but, like...
they would still benefit.
No, no, not... no, like a type of person.
John
sorry.
Smith would not... oh, John, please don't join if you're listening.
I think anyone would benefit from it. I think that some people probably would enjoy it less because... Like, it would... I don't know. I think that it could be harder for someone who is super academically, like, competitive mm-hmm. because, like, the way you learn is a lot more community-based, and so, like, you're not given the opportunity to, like, compete, and no one else has that same attitude, so it's, like, would suck.
Like, it doesn't translate well to, like, SAT scores, you mean? Or, like...
Well, no, it just, like, if you're someone who gets their drive from, like, from... kind of, like, competing in your classmates in a sense, or, like, you know, like, that would, yeah, but, like, sorry that doesn't exist in CAS. No one's gonna be there to compete with you. People love each other, so, like, sorry.
I'm very, very competitive. It's like kids always talking about their SAT scores.
It's horrible.
And, like,
we don't talk about that in CAS. That's just, like, one of those things I'm just, like, why do we need to be having these conversations? Yeah. Like, what is it benefiting?
When we could be talking about all the wonderful things we've been talking about thus far.
Oh, and this, and our 2,847 measures of song so far.
We're gonna
interrupt you on that one.
What? Is there anything else you'd like to tell the students of Berkeley High and the world community?
I'm excited that this, like, podcast is happening. I remember, like, my sister, when she was a junior, was... working on a Berkeley High radio project that is no longer in the works. Yeah. But I remember, like, going to a few of those meetings and, like, thinking it was a great idea, but podcasts are great, and hopefully this one is great too. And,
hopefully this one
I don't know,
great.
Like, leave us a comment down below, like, and subscribe
like
if
and
you
subscribe.
Enjoyed this.
No. Yeah.
You know.
I don't know if that's going to be an option available to you guys, but yeah, definitely just thinking in terms of covered politics, we've covered kind of activism, and definitely if you want to get involved in this podcast, just shoot me an email. My email is Arvin Hariri, ArvinHariri, @students.berkeley.net. It was a pleasure having you, Melina.
And since we're doing a little bit of self-promo here, if you're interested in joining Mo16, if you're interested in youth in government, if you're interested in CAS, if you're interested in any of the things I talked about, you can also email me at the same students.berkeley.net. My name is Melina Fike. That's MelinaFike. So,
hit me up. All right. Make that hotline bling. And that's it.